Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So the NASCAR playoffs are underway. The second round concluded this past weekend at the Roval, right up the road in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Can you explain Roval to me?
Yes, it is a combination road course and oval. It's road, oval, Roval.
How can it be both of those things?
Because it is both of those things. So most of the track is the oval that is the Charlotte Motor Speedway track. However, when you get to the back straightaway, there is an indention in the track, right? So it's not full speed all the way around. There's an embankment, and then you go around turn three and four like the regular roval
or oval. It's like an amoeba?
It goes like this, and then it goes like this, and then it goes like this.
Oh, so it's height of track. It's not.
No. I mean, like, as you're going down the backstretch like that, you turn left to go into the little part, then you turn right to come back out of it, and then you're back on the oval.
Okay, you're going up and down instead of, like.
Don't worry. I'll use the tablet of truth, and I'll draw you a picture, because I'm a good friend like that. So the Roval course looks like this. So it's the regular track. Then you have a little indent, and you have an inside road track, right, where you turn left and right and twisty turning and up and down hills. And then you get back on the oval, and you go most of it. Then you have a little piece down here that you go in and out, and then you go back onto the big turns. So the big sweeping turns are the regular Charlotte racetrack, but there is a road course built into the middle of the lap. So you run the track like it's a traditional NASCAR track, but then when you get back to the start-finish line, you go onto a road course that's built into the middle.
All right, thanks for the explanation, but why?
Because
so
it's
just to be different
because it's fun, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I actually love it. I think it is to be different. And I think I've said this for a very long time. I think that traditional NASCAR racing ovals, short track, mid track, long track, super speedway should always be the focus. But I do think that there should be some breaks from it. Some road courses, some street courses like they do at Chicago every year. I think there should be some different. But I do think that like 85% of the schedule should be made up of a combination of short tracks, 2.5 milers, and super speedways. Now, the question mark about NASCAR right now is, are we currently running in our current playoff format? 16 drivers enter the playoffs. We do 3 races. It gets cut down to 8. We do some more races. It gets cut down to 4. We do some races. It gets cut down to the final 2. And over the last couple of races, those 2 guys compete for the championship. And of course, over the course of the regular season, if you win a race, you are automatically into the playoffs. And then for whatever spots are open after all of the race winners punch their ticket, the next highest guys in terms of points. You get points for top fives, top tens. You get points for leading a lap. You get a point for leading the most laps. You get a point for leading a stage within a race. There's all these different ways to earn points. And whatever spots in the 16-car playoffs are not held by race winners, the highest point total guys get that next spot. Yes, and by the way, Will, I appreciate the correction there. I was speaking very quickly to get to my point. It is 12-8-4 down. You are correct. It is not cut in half. But so that being said, there is a there's a conversation that is going on right now because a number of years ago, a long time ago, NASCAR was determined by points over the course of the season. And as we got to the end of the season, whoever finished the season with the most points was your NASCAR Cup champion. And so it used to be that every race on the circuit mattered as much as every other race on the circuit. But NASCAR did away with that, and they did away with that because it was not uncommon for them to get to the final race or sometimes final two races of the year with the championship already determined, with the championship already won. Somebody would have that thing locked up with two races left to go. And so there really wasn't, unless you just love racing, there really wasn't a point to watch those last couple of races. So then they went chase for the cup, and then they went to the current playoff model. And the goal was always to create a NASCAR season where the final race of the season is not just effectively an exhibition. The final race of the season was a race that actually mattered. The cup championship would be determined. Now, there's a lot of folks that are on board with that method, and there are a lot of people who are not on board with that method, who do not like the playoff setup as it is, for a variety of reasons. Now, we can have the argument all day. In fact, the texter just said, need to go back to the season format or the old chase format. Let's hear out one interesting point that was made yesterday. Freddie Kraft is the spotter for Bubba Wallace. Now, that is intriguing, not just because he obviously is going to have a, I think, weighted opinion on this as somebody who, participates in it as a competitor, but he also has another reason that it is interesting. Throughout the course of these playoffs, there have been a couple of spots where Denny Hamlin is a owner for 2311 Motorsports, but he does not race for 2311 Motorsports. Denny Hamlin races for Joe Gibbs Racing. So he owns one team, but he drives for another team. And there were a couple of races this year where Denny Hamlin, the driver, created a world where guys that were racing for Denny Hamlin, the owner, 2311 Motorsports, including Bubba Wallace, he created situations on the racetrack that they could not win. And in spots where the only way to move on to the next round of the playoffs was to get a win. And so the point here was, and there were two conversations. Number one, does Denny Hamlin, the driver, have an obligation as a driver for a different company to make it easier to help out the guys that are on the team that he owns? Or would that be a conflict of interest? Because if he didn't drive for Joe Gibbs, or if he didn't own 2311, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But he does, so we are. But then there's another conversation that got sparked up yesterday by Freddie Kraft, the spotter for Bubba Wallace, when he admitted that NASCAR told the spotters something that I find quite interesting. So, the accusation from NASCAR, first off, the protocol, the rule that they've laid down, apparently according to Freddie Kraft, spotter for Bubba Wallace's team, the rule that they laid down is drivers cannot be updated in race on the playoff points standings as they are. And the reason why is, as Freddie Kraft said there, is race manipulation. What they do not want is drivers making a decision to help or hurt other drivers based on the current playoff standings. That is to say, they don't want a world where a driver looks in the rearview mirror and he's got his rival behind him and his rival needs to finish two spots better than he is to get enough points to move on in the playoffs. And so instead of driver A trying to drive as well as he can drive to win the race, instead, he lets off the gas and he backs up to the guy behind him, and then he just throws a block on that guy to keep him out of the playoffs. Or does something to maybe more than just help his teammate win, but like actively harms other drivers out there's chances to win in order for his teammate, who's 2-3 positions up or back on the racetrack, to go win. I get what you're saying here. And I guess, technically speaking, by preventing spotters from telling drivers, this guy is 35 points off and this guy needs 10 points, and therefore, you know, if he finishes third place or better, he's in, fourth place or back, he's out, you can prevent it, whatever. They just say, no, you can't talk about that at all. But does it not feel to some degree like if you have crafted and created this world where you want drivers to just go drive the best race that they can drive, right? We don't want you worried about the standings, right? We talk about this here every year in the NFL. A team clinches the bye or clinches the playoff berth with 3 weeks left to play, and we start talking about, should they rest their guys? They're already in. Well, you know, if they rest their guys against this team, well, this team is maybe a game back in the standings. And this other team they're competing with a playoff spot for, they're playing a team that is also competing for a spot, so they're going to have an actual football game, versus Kansas City's going to rest their starters. So Seattle, all they have to do is go beat Kansas City's backups and they're in. Oh, that's bad, or it's good, or it's whatever. But we all agree that the objective way that the NFL decides its playoff spots are good collectively, right? So what NASCAR, in my opinion, is doing here, and Will just jumped online and makes the same point. Said, I love the current playoff system, but if they want every driver to just race and try to do the best they can, they need to go back to the point system. Will, that's kind of where I was going with this. If you, the sport, the governing body of the sport, are doing your best to create a world in which drivers do not know or respond to what is happening in the playoff hunt, then what you are effectively saying is the way the playoff hunt is structured does not give us the competitive racing that we want. And if you're not getting the competitive racing that you want, why would you not go back to the season-long format? Again, I think the season-long format would have just as much of an impact because, hypothetically speaking, whoever wins the Daytona 500 to open up the year, they have a playoff spot already. They are locked in from week one. They do not have to wait until they get to September to find out. They know in February, I'm going to be racing in the playoffs this year. So if you know in February you're going to be racing for the playoffs this year, yeah, you're still going to go out there and try to win races for your sponsors and your money and all that, but you likely, especially late in the season, if you are in desperation mode because you know you need X amount of points to get above the cut line, you might not race the same way. By default, the system that you have, even if drivers are not allowed to know where the points are at any given lap on a racetrack, by default, you have created a world where the system impacts what's happening on the track. If you want a way for NASCAR races to not be impacted and you want everybody out there racing their asses off to give you the most competitive and, in my opinion, therefore entertaining races possible, then get away from the playoffs as they have them structured. Go back to the season-long point standings because, hey, the guy who won the Daytona 500 in February, just because he got a win, yeah, he's got a big leg up on everybody who does not win a race. We can even restructure the points format if you want. Maybe increase the value for a win, maybe decrease the value for a stage lead, whatever you think is best. But a guy who wins the 500 in mid-February is no longer going to know that when we get to the final 16 races of the year that I'm eligible for a championship. Because if that guy wins the Daytona 500, but then he doesn't win another damn race, and all of a sudden he can't finish in top 10 or top 15 or top 20, or he ends up getting 5, 6, 7 DNFs because his team can't stop blowing up engines or whatever, if that starts to happen, now he's right back in the mix, right? Now he's right back in the mix. Now, all of a sudden, we get to August. There's only 15, 10, 12 races left to go. And he has a victory, but he's 7 in the cup point standings, which means not only does he have to do better, but he also has to still, race by race, outrace 6 other guys to get ahead of them. And now they're paying attention to what other guys are doing on the track, but it's more from the standpoint of, I have to compete against that guy. Not, I got to do this to manipulate the playoff points. And certainly not a situation where, oh, we want the races to matter. Okay, cool. But like, when we get to the final race of the season, it only matters for 4 of 30 cars? Like, I'm not saying that doesn't matter, but like, it only matters for 4 of 30 cars. And oh, by the way, any of those 30 cars could be taken out by any other car. And it's like, did they really lose the playoff? Or did somebody being a jackass trying to finish top 10 for no reason spin them out down the stretch when they were racing for a checkered flag and a championship? Go back. Because of this, it feels to me like if what Freddie Kraft is saying is true, that NASCAR told spotters, you may not discuss the point standings with active drivers during races. What you are acknowledging is the system takes away the competitiveness of your playoffs. You have taken away from the competitiveness. If you have to actively go out of your way to prevent drivers from having information about what is happening on the track at any given moment, or at least the off-the-track standings based on what's happening on the track, you are acknowledging that your playoff format is broken. You are acknowledging that your playoff system is not the way that is going to give you the most competitive race. So, with that being said, I think that this has pushed me off the fence on something that I was very on the fence about. I was very on the fence about the playoff format. Like, I don't hate the playoff format as it stands. I do think it adds a layer of energy that is fun. But I got to tell you, I listened to this, and I listened a few days ago to Dale Earnhardt Jr. on his podcast talking about this. And he was telling stories from back in the day when he was running, and even further back when his dad was running on the Big Cup Series. And he said it was more electric for the drivers and the crew chiefs too. Because not only do you have to run your best race and know what's happening on the track around you at all times, but you're paying attention to what everybody else is doing. He said, and if you get to the last 10 races and you are 2 points off the leader for the championship and you blow an engine, how does that not make you run even harder at the next track? Because now whatever points he scored, you have to make those up plus the 2 you were down no matter what that guy does at that point. Like, it makes every race matter as much as every other race. I have thoroughly enjoyed, say, the Chicago road course every year. But here's the deal. It doesn't feel like it matters all that much because Shano's going to get that road dub. Everybody else is going to get some points. But it's like most of those guys are not going out of their way to optimize trying to win that race. And if it holds as much weight as Daytona, Bristol, Martinsville, Pocono, if it holds as much weight as those races, now they have to race it as if it does. And I don't know that everybody does right now. So NASCAR pushed me in a different direction. They drug me over that way to the new playoff format. And then with this comment and this rule, combined with hearing old drivers talk about it, I have now been pushed back to, let's go back to the season-long format. Let's go back to making every race have an equal weight towards who wins a championship. And if that means Homestead Miami at the end of the year already has a champ before we start the race, we are sacrificing one race instead of the way we do it now, which is multiple races throughout the regular season. That's my take. When we come back, hockey getting underway tonight. A trio of games for NHL opening night. I'll give you some thoughts on that next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and ew. The NHL sees puck hit ice this evening at 5 p.m. when Chicago, on the road at the reigning defending Florida Panthers, will pick up game two. The Pittsburgh Penguins on the road at the New York Rangers at 8 o'clock, and then a late night finale as your L.A. Kings are at the crib hosting the Colorado Avalanche. That one sees the puck hit the ice at 10:30 p.m. We'll have four games tomorrow on night number two. Your Carolina Hurricanes game number one will be on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. when they defend this house, click-clack, against the New Jersey Devils, a team that have built a bit of a baby rivalry with the Canes over the past couple of years. The Devils come and call in at 7:30 on Thursday. So, what does this season look like for the Carolina Hurricanes as we get the NHL season started and underway? This is a team that obviously last year had a very good one a run through the regular season, but unfortunately, Florida has built a bit of a juggernaut down there in Sunrise. And the bad news for Carolina, and BT Dubs, everybody else in the East, is that they are running it back. Just about everybody's coming back. Now, with another year of age underneath them, another year of wear and tear underneath them, but it is a very good team that is going to be coming back this year for a Florida Panthers squad that last year ended up, I think, second in the conference. And if I recall correctly, they and Carolina finished with pretty much the exact same record. Yeah, they did, both 47 wins. But then they turned it on. And again, that a lot of that has to do with playoff experience. Like, they had been there, they had done that. So were the Canes, but they just clicked and had better goaltending. So here's the good news for Hurricanes fans. You are amongst the favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year. I pulled up the odds a little bit earlier this morning for the team that will likely raise Lord Stanley's Cup. The Carolina Hurricanes are 10-1. The only teams with shorter odds, Colorado is 9-50. Dallas is 9-1. Florida 8-1. Edmonton 8-1. Edmonton, by the way, did just re-sign Connor McDavid to a two-year extension to stay for the next 2 years with the Oilers. So a good spot for Edmonton, who, of course, also very disappointed in the playoffs last year. Florida back on top. They and Edmonton both 8-1 to win the finals. The Canes are behind Edmonton and Dallas as Stanley Cup favorites. They are projected to end up at around 106.5 points at the end of the year. But there are some things that I very much hope that this team worked on this year. Power play, for instance. They finished with an 18.7% power play success rate last year. That was 25th in the NHL. That's just not good enough. You cannot be successful on less than 20% of your power plays and consider yourself a top-notch hockey team. You can't do it. The good news is, and this was the one reason that I think, despite being, and this bit them squarely in the ass. We talked about that during the playoffs last year. There were a couple of games where the Panthers very much put the Hurricanes in a good spot, because the Panthers, as I pointed out last year, the Panthers like to play U-ball. Like, they are going to hit you behind the puck. They are going to hit you late. They are going to cross-check you. They're going to put you into the boards in spots where they probably shouldn't. They are going to take the risk on penalties because that's who they are. The thing is, if you want to beat the Florida Panthers, the way you do it is by when they give you these opportunities, because they like to play physical off the puck. They like to have those late hits. They like to kind of poke. They're like a little brother, man. They're going to poke and prod you when mom's not looking. And then when you punch back, they're going to go, Mom! And they're going to get you in trouble. So what you have to do is play composed, play smart, play intelligent on and off of the puck. And when they do get caught, you have to take advantage of that. The problem for the Canes last year was that, yes, you killed off 83.6% of the penalties of the power plays that you faced. That's a stellar number, best in the league last year. The problem in that playoff run last year was you let Florida have just about as many power plays in that Eastern Conference Finals as you had against them. And you did not convert on yours while they did. It's very simple. Offensively, Canes, 31.7 shots per game last year, second in the league, ninth in the league in scoring at 3.24 goals per year. Good on defense, allowed 24.9 shots per game, one of the best in the league, actually the best in the league, 230 goals, placed them at 10th fewest allowed in the league this year. There are some changes. Brent Burns is gone, Dmitry Ulof is gone, Jack Roslovich is gone, Scott Murrow is gone. Burns is probably the interesting one for me here. He was not just a vet of the power play, but he was also kind of your locker room leader last year. The problem for him last year was that he very clearly had lost a step. It would stand to reason that he would have slowed down more this year, A. And B, went without a goal playing the point as the power play. And he had three power play assists last season. That's just not good enough. Orlov, good player, just did not fit well within Rob Brind'Amour's system. And Jack Roslovich had 22 goals, but most of them were scored early in the season. He faded down the stretch, and even with 22 goals, finished at minus 10. That is amount of goals scored when you're on the ice versus surrendered when you're on the ice. Finished minus 10 in the plus-minus. Worst on the team. So what did this team do to make up for it? They went after Keandre Miller to replace Burns, signed the defenseman to an 8-year deal for $60 million. They went and they got Alexander Nikishin to fill in for Orlov. He is a KHL, a Russian Hockey League superstar. One of the best in the KHL was Nikishin. He'll fill in for Orlov. Couple of big names. They also went and got Nikolaj Ehlers, who is the top free agent, or was the top free agent at the time that they signed him. He can score. He's not exactly Connor McDavid, but he will find the back of the net a number of times. 6 years, $51 million. So you add these guys to the ones you know are mainstays. Jarvis Aho, Svechnikov, Stankoven, Martinuk, Staal, etc. And I think you've got about as good of a starting lineup as you've got anywhere else. My question is going to be, what does the back two spots on defense look like for this team? Like, I think you have probably added the scoring, and I hope, and we will find out, because this one I'm not as sure about, I think you have added some power play goals to a team that was severely lacking them last year. Like, it was the thing that I think didn't just keep Carolina from making it to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. I think it was the reason that you did not lead the NHL record-wise last year. You just had too many games that ended in, overtime, half-a-point splits. Then, because of a lack of power play goals. So, I'm interested to see. The other issue is there is a lot of chemistry here. But there is one thing that jumped off the roster at me, and it is this. Of your five defensemen that will be in your starting two and then your first guy in third line. Of your top seven defensemen, five of them are left-handed. Two of them are right-handed. That means that on at least one line, one of your guys is going to be playing to the offhand. You want that balanced. You want to have three and four, four and three lefty-righty. Because somebody on these three lines, unless somebody's just going to be asked to pick up extra shifts, and over the course of an 82-game NHL season, that's not a thing. You are going to, on one of your lines, you are going to have someone playing to their offhand on the primary. And that's not the right play. That's not the right play. So we'll see what happens. You go back to Kutchkov and Anderson as your two goalkeepers. Anderson is solid. Obviously, you learned last year that he can be injury prone. Kutchkov is talented, but he is, I would argue the right word would be inconsistent. I described him last year in the playoffs in a couple of spots as a tryhard, wants to play hero ball too much. Like sometimes, bud, I just need to back that ass up in the net and keep it clean, all right? I just need you to back it up into the goal and keep it clean. And there were a number of times that I thought that Kutchkov was, like he was coming off the line, coming out of the crease too aggressively and getting himself into a bad spot. Now there is an interesting spot in that I watched a couple of Canes preseason games. Caden Primeau is a new goalkeeper that got added as effectively your third and emergency goalkeeper. However, they brought him in as a third and emergency keeper, and he looked pretty good in the preseason. And it's preseason, but hockey preseason of all the sports is the most intense preseason. Like the boys attack. They play hockey, like hardcore, no questions. So I do wonder if down the line, maybe if the Canes have done like Florida did, they stumble into a goalkeeper that maybe punches above his weight for where he is in his career. I think Carolina is going to be a very good team. I think like last year, they are an Eastern Conference finalist candidate this year. I think I would take the bet that they make it too. I just don't see Florida fading enough that they are not the Eastern Conference champions favorite again. I don't see how you can pick against Florida. It is the same squad as last year, and you saw the chemistry that they built around that absolute rat, Brad, who returned to Florida on a free or an extension this year. So we'll find out. But I like the moves made in the offseason. I love Rod Brind'Amour as a coach. Do they have that chemistry yet? That's going to be the big question. All right, let's run to a break. We'll come back. We'll put a bow on this bad boy. A little bit more college and pro football before we call it a day. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. I have looked up at the TV about 11 times so far today. And this on one hand, I get. As somebody who is in this game, in this industry, and has been for a very long time, I, with great regularity, use the phrase, give the people what they want. Because that's our job, to give the people what they want. This is why I have said to you a million times and a million times again, if you want more of a thing on the radio, because I cannot tell you, I got a text during the, not last break, but two breaks ago. I got a text from someone relatively well-known in this community who said, Rob Brown, thank you for talking about NASCAR. I wish more would happen. If you want more NASCAR or hockey or basketball or football or baseball or anything else, there's a very simple way to make that happen. Interact with the show, man. Interact with the station, man. call and force Diesel to talk about NASCAR today. Make that happen. Tell him I sent you to do it. All right? Make him do it. If you want more of a thing, it's really not super complicated. Interact with us when we talk about the thing, because that is how you get more of the thing. So, three times I have looked up at the TV in the last 15, 20 minutes or so. And three times I have seen, is James Franklin's job in trouble after the loss to UCLA? And it, on one hand, we haven't brought it up. I mean, we talked about it Monday. We kind of made fun of the situation to some degree. I said, well, James Franklin got so sick and damn tired of hearing y'all say James Franklin can't win the big game that he went ahead and lost the little game, too, to get rid of that one. And I think there's more to it than that. I think that, you know, with all due respect, he seemed like a dude who genuinely loved the job. But DeShawn Foster, the former coach of UCLA who got fired, I think it became pretty evident that having a fire and a passion for the job doesn't mean you'll be good at the job, right? One of the unfortunate realities that everyone in life gets to learn is that just because you love a thing and have a fire and intensity about approaching it doesn't mean you're going to be good at the thing. I was the first in and last out of basketball practice every day for like 8 years between middle and high school ball. The problem was I stunk at it. So I was always good enough to be literally described by my head coach as the glue guy. I was there because I was wonderful for team chemistry. And when we were down two with a minute to play, you could send me in because I always had five fouls to give, right? I just don't think he was very good at the gig. He just wasn't prepared for it. I don't know that that's necessarily true about James Franklin. I do think he's good at the job. I just think that James Franklin, to some degree, has repeatedly run up against buzzsaws, and he's just not the highest level. He's not Kirby. He's not Dabo. He's not Nick. I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you what I think James Franklin is, and the reason that this is a very interesting conversation. James Franklin, to me, is a program builder. He's not the guy that's going to put the cap on it, but I think he is a program builder. I think he is good enough that he can get you very close, but I do not know that he's good enough that he's going to finish the job for you. And so my thought would be, if you are Penn State and you are in a spot where you have a decision to make, if you are Penn State trying to decide, is this the guy that we are going with long time? You have to then evaluate and say, if we move on from a guy like a James Franklin, if we move on from James Franklin, does the program stay where it is and we find a guy who can keep us where we are and take that last step? Or does the program without James Franklin, who is known everywhere he's been as the guy that is going to show up at every single booster meeting, every single speech, every single event, he's going to be out on the town promoting Penn State. He's going to be the guy that's making phone calls and sending emails and shaking hands and kissing babies and yada, yada, yada to get as much into the program to up them as is possible, but then just can't finish the job. How do you know you don't end up with a guy like I think Jimbo Fisher was during the end of his time at Florida State, who just checks out and goes, I just want to coach football. I don't want to do all the smiley BS. I don't want to shake hands and kiss babies. I don't want to show up at booster club meetings and give speeches. I just want to show up, coach, win football games, win championships, and move on, which will not work in 2025. I find that interesting. I also find it interesting that what if you are a school that is not there yet? What if you are, say, I don't know, UCLA at the end of the year, and you've got to find a new head coach, and you know that Penn State has been openly questioning James Franklin to some degree? Does he not become a guy that you call?
You're saying Penn State is, you mean Penn State fans. I'm looking at his overall record since he got there. He's had some bad years, including 4-5, 7-6, several years of 7-6. The last couple years, though, they've done pretty good. And it was in the playoff last year, and they've had two losses this year, and he needs to be gone? I don't.
They ain't my opinion. That's just the conversation. So I think.
That's the thing. I don't get the conversation. Why would you want to move on from this guy who had you in the playoff last year?
You remember last year when we had multiple segments about Ryan Day? And we had multiple segments about my absolute and entire disbelief that Ryan Day, up until the point, because he did not win a title yet, up until that point, Ryan Day had Ohio State as an annual contender for the College Football National Championship, annual threat to win it, but he kept losing to Michigan. And you said, going to be a whole lot of fans that want this guy gone if he can't beat Michigan, to the point that even if he wins a natty, if we lose 4 or 5 in a row to Michigan, they'll still want him gone. And then we started to find out that while it never got officially said, that there were very clearly some conversations happening in the athletic department about, do we keep the course as is or do we start to make a move? It's that, except instead of beating Michigan for Penn State, it's how many times are we invited to the bridal party, but we're never the bride?
See, I get what you're saying. I definitely remember those conversations. But here's the thing. When did Penn State win a national championship?
I don't know, probably like the 1930s.
So if then, I'm just, the expectations are where they are, where he gets them.
That's a problem.
I think that's a problem for who?
I would say Penn State. Here's the thing. The mentality of you've always been 9-3, 8-4, 10-2. Like, stop aspiring for things, right? Like, you know a fan base isn't going to get there. Penn State packs more people into their football stadium than all but a very small handful of other college football teams. They've got the resources and the money. They've got the booster club support. They've got the NIL. They've got, this is probably the only thing you could argue, because I don't think that this is true. And I fell for the hype machine at the beginning of the year. I do not think that they have the talent that they thought that they had, but every other thing that they need to be successful, and when I say successful, I mean like playing for a national championship, everything else that they could possibly need, they have all of it. And so I do think that it basically comes down to Penn State fans are at the point that they go, what the hell else do we need? We've got the fan support of Ohio State and Michigan. We've got the money and the resources. We've got the TV contract. We've got the notoriety. We've got the NIL money. We've got transfer portal players wanting to come here. What the hell else do we need to get to the next level? And it just feels like they have exhausted every answer to that question except a coach who knows how to finish. Now, again, you're right. And I've been pushing back all offseason long. You know, this team played in the national championship semifinal last year. There were only 4 teams in America that were able to do that. They were one of the 4. But how many times are you going to get close and not get there? How many times are you going to get close and not finish it off? And the answer is, if you keep James Franklin, it feels like at least one more. Fans have, whether it is fair or not, there is not a fan base in America that is not actively holding the national championship that doesn't have aspirations of being better than that. Georgia has aspirations of being better than they were last year. Bama does. Everybody except Ohio State, and I would even make the argument, I even bet Ohio State fans feel like, okay, now we won the title, can we do it and go undefeated next year? Can we do it and win the Big Ten next year? Can we do it and beat Oregon and Michigan in 1 year next year? Whatever the case might be.
In our house, the discussion is, can they beat Michigan this year?
100%. Like, there's always that room for aspiration. And I think if you say, well, you haven't won a national championship since 1986, then you're telling the fan base, like, no, settle down, little guys. You don't get a seat at the big boy table. That fans aren't good with that. And the reality is, whether the athletic department agrees or not, with enough fan blowback, the athletic department will start to be impacted because they'll start seeing the or stop seeing the money and the support and all that flow in, and that's when a change has got to get mad. I think that he is a wonderful head coach, a dude that every player says they love playing for and want to continue to play for, but he's a program builder, not a finisher. I think it might be time to move on from James Franklin because of that. A school like UCLA would be perfect for him.
All right, time to find out what the X is going on. Rob will inform us after I tell him the title of said thing. First thing is LeBron James.
LeBron James, I haven't seen what it said, but apparently LeBron James put up media's favorite word, a cryptic post.
This is decision of all decisions is what he said.
LeBron James cryptic the second decision post on social media apparently spiked tickets for the Lakers this season because I assume that LeBron is teasing that perhaps he leaves LA to go maybe play one more season in Cleveland or with Bronny somewhere else or whatever the case might be. Apparently, LeBron James put out a tweet about the second decision and cost of Lakers tickets, Lonzo, you could buy. The least expensive ticket was for an April 12th matchup next year against the Utah Jazz. After the post, those tickets are now at $580. So I think the belief amongst Lakers fans is this is it, the last ride of LeBron.
I don't think that's what it is. I think
I hope he does something really dumb and funny.
I think he's trolling, and I think it has to do with advertising. Like, what if he switched from the shoe company he's with now to another shoe company?
Well, he's not going to do that because Nike's got him on a lifetime. But, like, he came out and he said, after much debate.
No longer Gatorade, I'm going with Powerade.
After much debate and consideration, I have decided that Taco Tuesday is now Taco Thursday. And everybody's going to go, bro, really? 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 That's what we're doing? And I hope that's exactly what he does.
Yeah, me too. I think that would be funny. All right, the next thing it's Xing is moon cakes.
Moon cakes? Are moon cakes different than moon pies?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what a moon cake is. I feel like this is going to be one of those things that you go, Rob, you idiot. You don't know what a moon cake is.
Oh, no, I'm not.
I don't know what a moon cake is.
I'm not. I've never seen a moon cake before. It has to do with midsummer or mid fall festivals or something like that. They look good, though. I don't know
why. Okay, I have just looked up moon cakes, and they look absolutely delightful. Apparently, it is like a cookie, but it's got an outer shell, but it's stuffed with something ordinarily. Like, I am looking right now at coconut moon cake, yam. Y'all got to stop with yams. Yams aren't that good.
Yams are
overrated.
Yams are amazing.
Yams are not that good.
They are.
Y'all have to stop making everything about yam. It's not that good, dude. It's not that good. Like, it's fine, but the exaltation for yams is overrated.
This happens sometimes, and you're absolutely wrong. Yams are great.
They're fine, man. They're fine. A mooncake is a dense, traditional Chinese pastry eaten during the mid-autumn festival that symbolizes the family unity and the full moon, featuring a rich filling of sweet bean paste, lotus seed paste, or nuts, often with a salted egg yolk at the center. I'd try one.
Yeah, me too.
I'd try one.
The last thing we're going to get to is Chris Jones is Xing.
Chris Jones is Xing because I didn't even see this last night.
Yeah.
On that Trevor Lawrence stumble and then get up and then stumble and then get up and run at a touchdown.
It's pretty bad. But
Chris Jones is just kind of standing at the goal line like, oh, if that man would have run, the Chiefs would. You don't want to say one play or one play.
No.
If Chris Jones runs on that play, you win that game.
He rushed. Looked. He rushed the passer. He got back up. He's standing there. There's no way. That's a large man. He is
pursuit
not getting.
Pursuit angle.
He is not. There is no
pursuit angle.
The pursuit angle.
Straight down the goal line.
That is not a pursuit angle.
Yes, it is.
Well, no. Angle is an angle. It's not a straight line.
A pursuit angle from where you're standing to where you're going versus where the quarterback is coming. This is why it's an angle. Quarterback's going here.
No way he would have got to him. He's smart enough to know he wouldn't have got there.
He's smart enough to know, yeah, I'll just go ahead and take the rest of this play off. That works for me.
Okay. I wish he was in the room right now.
I'd tell him. Was he going to beat me up because I said he was lazy on a play?
I hope so.
That'd make me rich. That's going to do it. Thanks for being here. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you didn't, it's your own fault. Come back tomorrow. We'll try harder as we go to the midweek edition of the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Later.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.